So good morning. If you know me, you know my name is Eric Morain. And when I was ordained a Zen Buddhist priest, they gave me a second name, a Dharma name. And that's Shokan Mui. And it means man of no rank with clear insight. And that ordination is why I'm dressed in this way when I speak in an official capacity. Zen is a version of Buddhism which came from Japan to the U.S. in the late 1940s. I'd be happy to talk with you more about Zen or the community outreach program I coordinate for this church, the Kintsugi Sangha. We meet every Thursday night here, starting at about 6 o'clock, right in this room. If you're interested, find me in the social hall afterwards and we can talk more. So today we celebrate Father's Day, and I happen to be a father. That said, oftentimes I don't feel like a father. And sometimes I haven't acted like a father. It's a conflicted relationship. It's what I am, but it's not always what I do. And I want to talk a little bit about how that's possible and what are the consequences of that disconnect. When most people use the word father or think about who is a father, they often think of a spot in the family tree. You know, father, mother, and then there's pictures underneath that, and then little lines and arrows, and they go to grandfather and grandmother and great-grandfather and great-grandmother and uncles and aunts. It's a biological function, and it's needed to have children, and this term father often refers to biology and to genetics. And in that regard, it's important when you're trying to figure out who gets your stuff after you die. I want to talk about another way of using this word, father. I want to discuss the process of fathering, not the act of biological fathering, but fathering in the psychological sense. So what makes a person a father? The biological requirement for fathering is to contribute some genetic material needed for the next generation to be born. And if that's where the fathering stops, it kind of creates troubles for that next generation, as was evidenced by the first reading. So many of us, myself included, have complicated relationships with their biological fathers. I liked my dad. He was around sometimes, distant, sometimes a little closer, sometimes. I never quite knew what to do with that distant, somewhat cold appreciation that he offered of who I was. I certainly didn't feel the same way toward him as I did toward my mother, who I knew always had her arms open when I would come running. When I got hurt, I went to her, not my dad. Sometimes my father was the disciplinarian, the one who dealt out the hurting. For some people, this was the only father you may have ever known. Physical pain, emotional terror. Some people never even experienced that much. Some people grew up in a family with a single parent or are now in a family with a single parent. I propose that to provide fathering in the psychological sense, you have to be someone who holds a vision for the creation of something. That requires care and feeding, but also guidance and protection. And that does not happen if someone just procreates and then walks away. 1/3 of today's families are single-parent families in the U.S. And of those, 80% are single mothers. That's about 1/4 of the population who is growing up without a father figure in the house. Going it alone doubles the burden for that parent, or maybe triples. It's kind of a setup. It's almost an impossible task to provide both mothering and fathering to your children. Sometimes it works, sometimes not so much. And even with two parents, sometimes that works, sometimes not so much. So fathering, it is an act of creation. And people mistakenly believe that the creation process is putting things together to make something new. You know, you put paint on paper and you create a painting. You glue some wood pieces to each other and you make a piece of furniture. It's just that simple, right, Tony? Just glue some pieces of wood together and you got furniture. While that's true, another way of creating is to remove what should not be there. You start with something, you take away the parts that don't belong. You start with white paper and you cover up some of it with paint or with pencil or with charcoal. And what you black out, what doesn't fit, what's left, is the drawing or the painting. Artists often refer to this as negative space. The stuff between the lines is what makes the drawing good. Dizzy Gillespie, the jazz musician, said, "I need to get better at my silences. The sound between the notes is what made the piece for him." And when that which doesn't fit the vision of the poet or artist or scientist, sculptor, creator is separated and it's removed, that's what's required for the artwork to appear. So part of fathering, I believe, and I'm proposing for this morning's conversation, a part of fathering is to remove the things that get in the way. Another way of saying that is to separate the things that should not be joined. Michelangelo, the Renaissance artist, was asked how he dealt with the difficulties of carving his famous statue, David, that great big tall 9-foot work of art. They claim, he said, it's easy. You take a block of marble and you chip away everything that doesn't look like David. So the first scholarly description of this process of subtractive creation versus additive creation was published in 1858 in the Methodist Quarterly Review. It's a little flowery, but it's nicely worded, so bear with me. It is the sculptor's power, so often alluded to, of finding the perfect form and features of a goddess, and finding her in the shapeless block of marble, and the sculptor's ability to chip off all the extraneous matter and let the divine excellence stand forth for itself. And thus, in every incident of business, in every accident of life, the poet sees something divine and carefully scales off all that encumbers that divinity and permits it to be revealed in all its transcendent loveliness. This is the act of creation. And for this morning's conversation, I'll say this is the act of fathering. And so let's talk about this story that talks about potentially the very first act of fathering. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And this is the Genesis story, right? The Christian Bible story of how the world came into being. For me, the interesting part about this story of creation is that in the beginning, it was without form. And the form was, the void was formless. No boundaries. Everything was everywhere. The first step was to make something out of nothing, to create order out of this chaos. And then the will to make it so created light. And the light was separated from that which was not light. And the first separation took place, the first act of creation. And from there, the heavens and the earth were separated and the land from the water. And thus the story tells us the universe was created by separating the things that should not be joined. To create something out of nothing, you take away the extra marble and you leave just the statue behind. It's so simple, right? To separate the heavens from the earth and separate the things that should not be joined creates the world, creates the universe. This idea of having a vision, of caring for and protecting and nurturing that vision, removing the things that don't contribute to it, supporting the things that do contribute, this is the process of fathering. This is to father as a verb instead of father as a noun. And it has nothing to do with biology, and it is not tied to gender. The will to separate the things that should not be joined is part of our shared language. It's part of our heritage. When I say our founding fathers, most of us get this vision of the people who separated the American colonies from Great Britain and started the United States. Think about fathers of all kinds, not just the founding fathers of this country. How about the father of medicine? Who might that be? Hippocrates? How about the father of geometry? Euclid. Perfect. How about, here's an easy one, the father of psychoanalysis? Freud. Thank you. How about evolution and natural selection? Darwin. Thank you. How about the father of nursing? Tricky one. Florence Nightingale. Thank you. It does not seem to be a requirement that you are a biological male in order to father something into existence. Here's another one, a little harder. How about the father of nuclear sciences? Here's a hint. She won a Nobel Prize for discovering radium. Curie. Thank you. Fathering is this serious business of envisioning not how things are and wondering why, but dreaming of how things could be and doing what it takes to make it so. Robert Kennedy, meet Jean-Luc Picard. And what is needed to separate the things that should not be joined? Well, another hero of mine, Wernher von Braun, said it best when he was interviewed about the Apollo rocket he designed, which was on its way to landing humans on the moon. He was interviewed by a reporter during that moonshot and was asked, "What is the most difficult thing about what you're doing, about going to the moon?" His reply was both profound and simple. He says, "The will to do it." He says, "The engineering is just calculations. But the decision and the will and the courage to try to do it, that is the most difficult hurdle." The decision, the will, and the courage to see it through when others don't see it, or maybe outright oppose it, that is what's required. That is fathering. And that challenging in fathering is twofold. First, to muster up all those amazing qualities, strength, will, courage, determination. And the second is how to temper them with compassion and wisdom. Because if there's no tempering, there's brittleness, and it's not a good tool. The best sword blades are very hard, but also flexible. No flexibility in the cutting edge chips, or the sword blade will break. Either way, it's not good for much. You know what? Would you like to see a good sword? How about the divine sword of creation? How's that for a name? Would you like to see it? I can show it to you. Or actually, I'll tell you how you can find it. Okay? You're going to have to wait till about November or December and then go outside at night on a starry night and look up. In the sky, high up overhead, there's a constellation called Orion. Right? You probably know it. It's the three stars that are kind of on a diagonal. That's Orion's belt. It's actually two trapezoids. There's stars for his shoulders, and then there's the belt, and then there's stars for his knees and a few other things. If you want to see the sword of creation, look for what hangs from Orion's belt. Orion is known as the hunter, right? He's got a bow and he's got a drawn arrow. But hanging at his side is a sword. And there's a bright spot in the middle of that sword. And that spot is not actually a star, it's a nebula. So a nebula is a stellar nursery of sorts, billions of hot, young, newly born, very bright stars form a nebula. Orion's sword is a nursery for newborns. Orion is a hunter who kills, but also a creator who makes and sustains new life with this divine sword of creation that separates the things that should not be joined. He is the Greek version of the Hindu goddess Kali Shiva, the creator-destroyer. This theme runs through all sorts of cultures. And this divine sword of creation, which separates the things that shouldn't be joined and brings about new things from the unformed void, it is the woodcarver's knife, it's the stone sculptor's chisel, it's the surgeon's scalpel. You separate the things that should not be joined. And this process of separating, this process of fathering, is sometimes, oftentimes, an exercise in contradictions. I may be asked to be powerful, but yet people still look to me to be gentle. I am supposed to be strong, but also accommodating, be fierce and compassionate at the same time, be determined, but also be flexible. How do I do that? How do I be brave and vulnerable at the same time? These seeming contradictions, these qualities I was praised for in one moment, I might be chastised for in the next. So a simplistic solution, and one that's often reached for, is to tilt all the way over to one side and to lose my balance. And I can either collapse and have no opinion at all, or I kind of get a bit full of myself and I listen too much to myself, and I go for the raw, unfiltered, testosterone-fueled forcefulness that has nothing to do with fathering and everything to do with toxic masculinity. This leadership without limitations becomes dictatorship. This forcefulness is not determination. It's pride in who I am without humility, which becomes narcissism. The solution is not either or. It's not one extreme or the other. You don't have to choose between strength or vulnerability. The solution is both. We need a both and solution, not an either or solution. We need powerful leadership and perseverance and compassion, determination and accommodation, the will to do it and flexibility, feeling good about who you are and humility. We need both ends of the spectrum at the same time. In short, we need balance. We need people who are able to shift from one end to the other as needed, and that is the secret sauce that makes a truly great sword. That is what the world is dying for. There are more than enough rigid, arrogant, narcissistic dictators we don't need anymore. What the world needs is powerful, compassionate, humble, persistent, flexible fathering. Remember that second read? Remember the second reading? He knew how to lift me up and when to let me fall. That is fathering. That is fathering at its best. And without real fathering to lean on, we collapse into looking for father figureheads. Father is just a noun. Someone to sit at the head of the table, a TV personality, someone who's flat, shallow, unreal, cold, distant. You know, we need somebody to do the fathering thing. Not really to be a father, just look like one, could you please? So this is a posting from the Spokane, Washington area Craigslist personals. Wanted, father figure for backyard barbecue. To all interested individuals, three of us will be throwing a backyard barbecue on Sunday, June 17th to celebrate beer and each other. We range in age from 20 to 26, and while most of us know how to operate a grill, none of us are prepared to fill the role of barbecue dad. That being said, we are in need of a generic father figure from about 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. Anybody got time? You may choose to stay for the full duration of the party if you wish. Your duties include bring your own grill. We will provide the meat. Grilling hamburgers and hot dogs while drinking beer. Refer to all attendees as big guy, chief, sport, or champ whilst drinking beer. Punch at least one of us in the arm at some point while explaining something about your physical attributes. Talk about dad-like things such as lawnmowers, building your own deck, car tires, or Jimmy Buffett whilst drinking beer. Funny anecdotes are highly encouraged, of course, also while drinking beer. Requirements of employment. A minimum of 18 years experience as a father, minimum 10 years experience grilling meat, a clearly expressed appreciation for an icy cold beer on a hot summer's day. And, of course, we can't pay you with dollars, but we will provide you all the food and beer you want. Grill for a few hours and sit back, crack open a few cold ones with the boys. So these men asked somewhat tongue-in-cheek for what they wanted in a father figure. So what would you ask for in a father figure? Not father as a noun, but someone who fathers as a verb. Someone who would father you in the way you'd like to be fathered. The kids had their chance earlier. Now it's your chance. Now it's time to hear from the grown-ups. Finish this sentence for me. For me, the ideal father would be someone who... And there will be some ushers who come around with microphones. So for me, the ideal father would be someone who appreciates and knows how hard I struggle to do a good job at work. For me, the ideal father would be someone who...
This is Rick. My dad passed away 35 years ago, but he's with me every day. And what he gave me was just unquestioning love, no matter what I did. As a terrible, rebellious teenager, I always knew he loved me. He was always there.
The ideal father would be someone who...
I think I have the ideal father. I'm lucky and I get to see him later today. He loves to just hang out with me and do stuff together, whatever it is. It can be simple or anything, and it's just wonderful spending time with him.
Maybe one more? Yeah, ideal father?
The ideal father would be someone who takes care of himself so that he can be there for his children and grandchildren.
For me, an ideal father would be someone who isn't so damn perfect.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I hope you find those qualities in the people you meet today, regardless of whether they're presenting as men or as women. They are here now, and if you didn't get the fathering in the way you needed back then, perhaps you can get it in the way you want it now. It's not too late. Operators are standing by to take your call. People are waiting to be part of your life. You must ask for what you really want. Do not go back to sleep. So be it.